Graywolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Graywolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. It is Friday, January 28th, 2005, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on our show, geek news, taking your calls and email, and speaking with Craig Campbell from Nero about the creation of CDs, DVDs, new in-home media solutions, and in general, products that Nero, formerly Ahead Software, offers. During the second half of the show, I welcome you to join our conversation. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or you can go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are geeks Sean Cleveland, Technical Marketing Communications Manager for Transmeta, and John Tracy, owner and operator of FeltonGames.com. Miles Elam is not with us today because Miles got a job. He'll be back. Don't worry, we haven't lost him. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Thank you.
Good morning.
So, John, Miles got a job. What's your excuse?
I'm too lazy.
It's too lazy. You've been looking, though. So if someone wants an amazing Mac guy, he's available. All right, before we get our discussion, talk to Craig Campbell from Nero, let's do a little bit of geek news. John, I'm going to start with you.
I'm going to start with Apple's new PowerBook G5. Woohoo! Okay, it's on the rumor site. What happened is someone put a tag up on a website that had a reference to the PowerBook G5 with a space holder.
Was it on Apple's site?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. But it was later amended to PowerBook G4. So, I don't know. One of the biggest problems with an Apple PowerBook G5, of course, is the amount of energy generated. Amount of energy used and the amount of heat generated inside the laptop. They're thinking the 970FX chip, which is what the G5 uses, just isn't going to cut it. There is a new high-end chip. Well, it's not really that new. It came out in September. That's being made by Motorola. And they think that this chip might be what they end up using inside the new PowerBook. And it's a G4-based chip, but it can run much faster and more efficient. So, I don't know. My feeling is don't look for a PowerBook G5 anytime early this year.
So, if you had to buy a laptop right now, what would you get for a Macintosh?
What would I get? I'd probably get the 15-inch aluminum that you've got in front of you.
Yeah, it's not bad.
No, it's the right size and it's the right price.
The 12-inch isn't bad either. Now, speaking of PowerBooks, your G4 had a horrible disaster about a week and a half ago.
It wasn't that bad. It was a snapped hinge and a broken wire.
It was pretty bad. Most people would have had to spend about $1,200 to get it replaced, fixed, without a warranty.
Yeah, $1,400 to $1,600 with everything.
And
yeah.
You were gracious enough to document everything, the problems, how the research happened, and put up a whole story about how you fixed it. And you did fix it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm using it right now.
It's functional. It closes and opens. Everything's great. And how much did it cost you?
It cost me $130. 140 with glue
and a screwdriver and such, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you're interested in a broken PowerBook and how to fix the back panel and take it apart and such, great articles on geekspeak.org. Two of them, they're on the right, geekspeak.org, written by John Tracy. And John, thank you very much for that.
I don't have the email in front of me anymore, but we had someone actually write in and say, hey, I had the same thing happen.
Oh, really?
And thanks for your site. I'm trying to figure out. She's got a recall on her PowerBook also for spots on the screen. Mm-hmm. But she said she also has a broken hinge and was wondering if she should do the recall first or do the broken hinge repair first.
Do the recall first.
Well, one of the things that's in question is, will Apple honor the recall with a broken hinge?
Hmm.
So because
I say send it in, see what happens.
Well, I told her to talk to Apple and get a definitive answer before you send it in.
Send it in with cookies.
That always works.
All right. Thank you very much for those stories and updates on your PowerBook woes and now PowerBook solutions. Thank you very much for that. Sean, hi.
Good morning.
Sean, you look dashing today. Nice black sweater. Very very appealing.
Yeah. What can I say?
He's a guy.
And he's got a great voice. I mean, what more do you need? Do you have any news? That's the question.
Well, now I'm too...
You're blushing.
I'm on the spot. I don't know what to say. Okay, so there is some interesting news today. For those of you who wanted the ultimate keyboard, a light-based keyboard, one that looks like about the size of a cell phone.
Ooh.
Imagine you would just...
Oh, yes.
You would set it in front of you and hook it up to your cell phone or your device or your PDA, whatever.
I hate pushing those little buttons, though.
And then a red diode light beams down a keyboard in front of you.
Like just a displayed keyboard?
Just displayed on whatever surface you've got it on.
Okay.
And then you can type on it. Imagine. It's here.
Now, you saw one, or somebody saw one of these at a show or something and said it was hard to use.
It was Chris
But
Dunphy.
That was a while ago. So
it was Chris.
This is more refined?
This is working now, yeah. It's supposed to be. After countless prototype demonstrations, from what they're saying, they finally made it into production. So it's a company called Kinesta.
You don't get much feedback with that. You know, you don't get kind of button feedback. So basically, this would be a great source if you use a lot of text messaging with your phone, because now you don't have to use a little keypad. You could just stick the phone down on a flat surface and start typing.
Yeah, the whole idea is they're going to build this into devices at some point. Right. Right now, they have not done that.
Okay, so right now it's kind of a standalone package.
Yeah, it looks like about the size of a little phone, mm-hmm. about 65 millimeter by 33 by 24 millimeters.
And what does it?
And
how do you plug into
it? It stands up, and it looks like you can probably plug in... using either proprietary plugs for cell phones, that sort of thing, or USB.
Okay, so it would work pretty well for, well, I guess most laptops have keypads, but maybe a CE device or something that has USB on it. That would be pretty sweet.
But if you go to www.virtual-laser-keyboard.com, you can see it.
Okay.
virtual-laser-keyboard.com. And like I said, the device itself is about the size of a small cell phone. And you just prop it up in front and turn it on, type away.
Very cool.
Kind of interesting.
Well, we'll have to demo one of these. I'd like to see how it works.
And it retails for about $200.
Ouch. Ooh. Ouch. So that's a pricey keyboard.
That'll,
you can get it for about
down.
$20.
If it's any good, people will buy it and it'll come down.
Yeah, let's see. Thank you very much, Sean.
Yeah.
John?
I think keyboards, if you think about most devices we use, portable electronic devices, the keyboard and the screen are the defining factors.
Yeah.
As Sean has a sub notebook, and I would not want to type on a smaller keyboard, and I would not want a smaller screen. So any way to make either of those non-existent, where, you know, like a light base or something like that.
I think non-existent is pretty small, but yes, I see what you're saying. Virtual.
Virtual, right.
The keyboard I have is about 85% of a normal keyboard.
And it's cramped.
Yeah.
The hard part's getting your pinky down to the period.
Because let's go underneath your hand.
You kind of have to, like, push it back.
You don't need periods. Just use semicolons. So
another cell phone little news story here. If you're looking to double the life of your cell phone, you can get a Batmax patch, which you just – it's a little sticker, and you put it on the back of your cell phone battery, and it'll double the life of your battery. Sounds too good to be true? It is. I read this up on a very reputable news source. Well, I think it's pretty reputable. Slashdot, which is news for nerds. Slashdot.org.
And the articles do go through a filtering system of the publishers.
Right. Usually when you see something up on Slashdot, it's pretty credible.
Right.
One of the nice things about Slashdot is you can respond to stories. And, you know, hundreds of people respond to most stories. And this one, of course, you start going down it. And, yeah, they're just tearing it apart. It's based on the Ion XR, which is a newly developed nanoceramic material. I looked up nanoceramic, and it's one of those nicely obscure engineering things that, it's like, you know, carbon nanotubes. It's one of these things that's been made. Nobody really knows what to do with it exactly
yet.
Or
everybody's trying to do stuff with it.
Yeah, everyone's trying to do stuff with it. And it's, you know, the only things I could find out there about it, they're pretty dense. So you have to be up on your engineering, and it's, you know, like silicon oxide. Anyway. So it sounds too good to be true. It is too good to be true. Don't fall for it. There's no proof showing that it actually does extend your battery life. So I just want people to be aware that...
Extra aware. You were almost fooled.
It made me look twice, definitely. And I went and did a lot of research on it. I'm like, I can't find anything that verifies this. And so then Lyle had the suggestion of, well, look at what the comments are. because usually the people who read Slashdot are very well informed. Usually they're engineers, right. Maybe even some of them in this field, which in this case there are, who are saying, "Nah, this is bunk."
Yeah, yeah. So. All right. Well, thank you very much, John, for that story of bunkness. Sean, sir?
Yeah. For those of you with the illegal copies of Windows, if you still expect updates, well.
Drop it.
Think otherwise.
Buy it.
Microsoft has had a pilot program since September of last year to figure out a way to get people who own illegal copies to move to real, you know, registered copies.
Paid for copies.
And what they found is putting holographic images on their CDs, you know, mandatory software activation, that stuff doesn't work. But what everybody needs is access to patches and updates and so on. So they have a pilot program in place, like I said, and you can opt in. You can join this now and check it out, try it out, if you own a real version of Windows. And what they ask is for the serial number.
Every time you update.
Every time you update.
That's horrible. And who wants to do that?
Well, if you do that, you have access. They're giving you initiatives here now.
Okay, what will I get if I start doing it this way?
If you opt into this program now, you get free downloads of Photo Story 3, Winter Fun Pack 2004, and rebates for MSN Games, Windows SharePoint, List Builder, and Outlook Live.
But isn't that like 700 digits I have to type every time I update?
It's a lot of numbers.
Can I just copy and paste it? If I can copy and paste it, I'll do it. Wait a second.
Where
Outlook?
Would you copy
Why
it
would
from?
I want Outlook? It's a
You'd
bad
have
application.
To type it in. You'd have to type,
I have to type
it
in. It in. Now, does it... I want to try this
like
I'm
said,
so
this,
frustrated.
This is an opt-in right now. It will be mandatory by mid-year, and everybody will have to do this to get updates from Microsoft.
Sean, what's the most frustrating thing about installing software?
Typing in that long activation. It's not only that.
Exactly.
But, you know, my experience with Windows activation is it never works over the Internet. So then, when that happens, you have to call a 1-800 number. And you have to read them your, you know, 40 digit. It's like 42 digits.
Yeah.
You have to read them your 42 digit code.
Oh, man.
And then the woman verifies it. So you have to listen to it again. And then she reads you one back, and you have to type it in. What a pain in the butt.
Those codes are so irritating.
And the Internet, you know, just never works for me.
But they work, too. No one ever pirates Microsoft software, right?
All the time. It doesn't function. So the updates make sense. If they ensure it every time you upgrade, that is going to be, I mean, that's probably going to make people upgrade, I'm assuming. Maybe they could also reduce the price of their product. That would help probably as well.
That would be nice, yeah. That's for sure.
Well, thank you very much.
And of
Sean,
course,
for
if
that.
You're running Linux, you know, it's all free and you don't have to worry about it. But...
If you're running Linux, right.
Since Miles isn't here, I had to put that. I had to say that. Someone's got to look out for him.
Never had to put in long codes in Mac OS, you know? It just always runs.
You do have to put in hard code. Yeah, you got to put in long code when you install the software. Sure.
No. When you install OS 10. No, when you install OS 10. No.
Really? I thought you did.
Interesting.
I guess I just always get new machines. All right. From Nero, formerly Ahead Software, we have U.S. Technical Manager... Craig Campbell on the line. Craig, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us to talk about some Nero products. Recently, we got a copy of Nero Ultra Edition, Nero 6 Ultra Edition. Nero basically is kind of the name for burning CDs and now DVDs as they become popular. You're sweet. You're kind of the de facto on the Windows machine to create that. And you're kind of using, I would say, leveraging that name. Recently, you're company changed its name to Nero because it was the highest profile package, and you've got a lot of other stuff going on, backup and authoring and capturing a video, managing photos, got a whole suite of stuff. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the Nero 6 Ultra Edition for the home and kind of some of the stuff that it does. We're talking this whole month we've been doing shows or trying to do shows on storage, and one of the main things on storage is backup. So let's talk a little bit about backup. What kind of features do you offer for someone with a CD or DVD burner and your suite of software?
Well, let's start off with one of the programs in the suite, and that's the Nero Back It Up. With that program, you can do scheduling of backup, so you can just back up individual files and restore individual files. And the good thing about the backup is, you know, maybe you've done 100 backups. You don't know where your file that you need to receive, like your special resume that you have, and you don't know on which disk it is. we keep a catalog on your hard drive of all the backups you do, so you can do a search for that file, and it will tell you what CD it's on, so you can insert it and restore it.
So not just so that's for restoring for backups, but it's also for archiving. Let's say you have normally older stuff that you don't really need, so you do your backup and then erase those things in your system, and you can get them back from the CDs.
Exactly.
How big is it? How do you manage this library? What's the software behind this database of files?
Well, the program itself is called Nero Backup, so it just keeps small catalogs, text files that don't get very large, so they're easy to store. And if you wanted to, you can remove them because they're also stored on the original disk themselves, so you can just pop in the disk and look for that catalog file and search it through that as well.
Oh, nice. Okay. And you could recatalog your system if you need to?
It also does a sector-by-sector backup, so if you wanted to do a system recovery type of backup, so you can it creates a bootable disk that when you insert it, it gives you an OS to install and restore your sector by sector of your hard drive.
Now, how do you manage this when people have like 120 gig hard drives? That's a lot of CDs.
Yeah. Well, you'd probably want to use DVDs. We support spanning.
Uh-huh.
But the good thing is that, you know, sometimes maybe you have two DVDs, but you need more CDs. You need more space, but you have lots of CDs. So you can start with a DVD. And then when asked for the next disk, put in a CD. It doesn't care to continue.
Oh, cool.
And then when asked for the next disk, maybe you put in a DVD RAM. It'll write to that as well.
Mm-hmm. What about what about backing up to external hard drive? You can use the same software on a hard drive, or do you have to use CDs or DVDs?
No, you can use a hard drive. We'll do backup to a network drive as well. We won't do tape, but we'll do hard drives or network drives.
Yeah, tape's so passe anyway.
Yeah.
All right, so that's backing up. And one of the things I noticed when I was installing this package and playing with it, is the user interface is pretty at this point. It's attractive, but
yes.
I have an aversions right away to something that's, you know, too shiny and special looking,
right?
Because I just want to get to the advanced settings. I just want to see a list. Can you talk to a little bit about why your product is so shiny with little icons and such?
Well, the thing that we've had in the past, we've always been, you know, engineer based, so we've been mainly geared towards a high-end user. And we had a lot of complaints for that because a high-end user would recommend a beginner, get Nero, it's solid, you'll never have problems like you do with the other programs. But the user interface wasn't very friendly for the beginner.
Mm-hmm.
And they had that little learning curve. So we decided to come out with the Start Smart because there's over 16 different programs in here. The customer says, well, I need a backup, but which program do I use? Do I use Burning ROM, Express, Backup, Wave Editor, Soundtracks, Media Home, Recode? I mean, there's a lot of programs there to choose from. So instead of them trying to figure out which program to use, we came out with the Start Smart so they can go, well, I know I want to create a CD, and I know I want to do data or audio or pictures, and they can just click on that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for the advanced user, all they have to do is expand the Start Smart by clicking on the left button, and now they see all the applications that are in the suite, and they just can launch the application.
Okay, so that little left pointer bar will expand into advanced mode.
Right.
Okay. Okay, thank you. I'm glad to hear that, which means I don't have any negative things about the product at this point. Now, of course, the other thing that I noticed on your product, I do a lot of home DVDs, and I do DVDs for theater companies.
Right.
So I'm constantly looking at DVD software. Authoring tools, and normally, you know, dealing with an AVI file or an edited AVI file from a camera or then edited by something. And I noticed that you're the burner of choice. Most of these packages now are that do DVD authoring have burning software inside that they will run your drive as well and burn it. You now have also a DVD authoring, a simple DVD authoring tool. I think it's called Showtime. Is that the correct?
Showtime is actually the player.
Okay,
it's
sorry.
Vision Express, that's our DVD authoring tool.
All right, Vision Express.
Yep.
So I used and actually had some trouble with it. Sean had no trouble with it.
I've had no problems with it at all. In fact, I find it so much faster than Sony software.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. As far as converting like an AVI file to MPEG prior to burning to DVD, your software just seems so much quicker.
Oh, great.
And the quality doesn't seem any different at all. So,
right.
What's the MPEG codec? How are you doing the encryption or the encoding in MPEG 4?
For MPEG 4, we have our Nero Digital codec. We're following the MPEG 4 standard, but we're calling it Nero Digital. The reason behind that is you have a lot of MPEG 4 formats out there, and some of them are not following the standard 100%, so they have their own little twist to it. We follow it 100%, and we're also downward compatible, meaning we'll play anyone else's MPEG-4 content or accept it in, like Xvid, DivX, and a few others, Vegas, will accept them all in and re-encode it or work with them in that format. And you can now, with the latest Neural Vision, you can capture directly from a camcorder to MPEG-4 in the
Neural
Vision program.
Yeah, I used my father's FireWire camera and did that, and that worked very well, too.
Do you explain this?
I took his FireWire digital camera and hooked it up to my computer, and it right away I was able to see what he had on that camera, mm-hmm. and I was able to import it and burn it to DVD.
And these were photos, or
no? This is video.
Cool.
Yeah, I've actually captured a movie that I did from my trips to Europe, and it was a 6 gig AVI file originally, and I captured it to our Neural Digital Codec and got it down to 40 megabytes in size and got the same quality as the original AVI file.
So I didn't do any compression at all. I should have played with that. I just wanted it to fit on a DVD, so. Yeah.
We now have the new AVC codec, which is the 8.264 version of the MPEG-4 standard, so you get very good quality. It's not as fast as H.263, but if you're going for quality, then AVC is the way to go.
Let's talk real quickly about what MPEG-4 is. Would you please define it?
MPEG-4 is basically a definition of container. So with that MPEG-4 video standard, you have your HD DVD and Blu-ray DVDs that are coming out here soon that the movie industry is going to move to. And this is so you can have good quality video at low bit rates.
Okay.
The file size is much smaller.
File size would be much smaller, right. And what we do uniquely that everyone else does not do is we add to that MPEG-4 standard. We have the ability to, in our Neural Recode program, to have two audio channels. Normally, when you create an MPEG file, you get one channel, and that's the default channel. But mm-hmm. now you can say have one channel in English, one in Spanish.
Great.
You can also have two subtitles. You can have, French or English. So now you got your subtitle information in there as well.
Are these features in your DVD authoring tool as well?
You don't have the subtitle of the two audio channels in the authoring tool, but you do have the chapter creation, which is also part of the Recode. For the audio channels and the two subtitle information, that's only in the Recode aspect.
Okay. So this Recode, when you're talking about Recode, you're talking about, in general, you're talking about this Neuro Digital Standard, which is kind of like what other people know, DivX, kind of like a DivX equivalent.
Similar, but much better and much more defined.
That is going to be bundled into DVD home DVD players by what companies are going to be
Right now
consumer
we have
line.
Two chip manufacturers. That's ESS and Sigma, and they make the chips for all the DVD player manufacturers out there, and we have a number of other ones that are lined up to come on. Right now, we have players coming out from Bravo, Avalon, EXO, and in Q2, you'll see tons of DVD players coming out with the Neuro Digital logo on there, and that means that it will play any content created by us, but we will also play any MPEG-4 content by DivX, Xvid, Vegas, and anyone else.
So your suite is kind of inclusive in its decoding.
Correct.
Okay. I feel like we're probably losing half the people listening, including I think myself. So let's try to get to some more. The base level information.
Yeah, you guys do packaging. So much.
Yeah, that's one thing that I noticed about the product, the Neuro 6 Ultra package, is that you're doing just kind of everything related to media. You're doing archiving and editing of such. And what do you do for digital cameras, still cameras?
Well, for digital cameras, we have our Neuro Photo Show Express software. So it will go out there, and this is more designed to, your mother and your son who are very new and they just want to capture and create slideshows. So with the Photoshop Express, it'll capture it directly from the digital camera. It'll import it and arrange it for you in catalogs, albums. And then you can create musical slideshows. You have motion clip art that you can put in, like a hat, a bow tie, some clouds going by, rain, party mix coming down, all that kind of thing. And you can also use it to create mugs, T-shirts, calendars, gift cards to people. So it's really versatile, but very, very user-friendly as far as beginners.
Cool.
Of course, if you want to be more advanced, you can still use the Neuro Vision Express authoring software and create slideshows with that. You have more advanced transitions and music capability and what have you, but that's really for the more advanced user.
Now, we're talking about a lot of things that Neuro can do. But the strength of Neuro is ability to burn discs.
Right. Its main strength is the fact that it's very solid at burning disk, and there's never any problem with that as far as reliability.
It's true. I've been using Nero since I used to be a technical editor at Maximum PC Magazine, so I reviewed Nero in the very early days, and I was a big proponent of the software. So I've been a big fan of you guys for a long time.
Great.
And you've done so much with it since then.
We've come a long way. When I first started in this industry, it was with Yamaha back in 94, and that's when that 100 model recorder first came out, and it cost $5,000. There was only like 3 different software developers at the time. And by the time I left Yamaha, there were over 300 different software developers. But even then, Nero was really standing out.
Yeah, yeah.
Craig, stay with us, please.
Mm-hmm.
This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com.
American Life. The laws of physics tell us that the simplest explanation is usually the right one. So maybe Davy should not have believed that his dark skin was dark Italian, like his family always told him. Once he brought home a black friend.
And he stops dead in his tracks and he's like, "What them white girls doing in your house?" And I was like, "Those are my sisters." And he's like, "Oh, man."
The Laws of Family Physics this week.
Catch This American Life Sunday at 10 a.m. on KUSP.
You are listening to KUSP. If you have questions or comments for us geeks, the numbers are 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. You can also use the internet. Go to geekspeak.org, click on Contact Us. Sean, if you would.
The City of Santa Cruz DeMayo Lane Resource Recovery Facility will be closed on Sundays, effective February 1st, 2005. The facility will continue to be open Monday through Saturday from 7:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. For more information, call 420-6270.
This program is supported by a grant from CruiseIR, providing internet services including DSL, spam filters, PHP, and MySQL. Now with nationwide access, information is about CruiseIO membership is available online at cruiseio.com or by calling 459-6301.
The Board of Directors of KUSP and the Pataphysical Broadcasting Foundation meets monthly, and the public is invited to attend. This month, the meeting is on Monday evening, January 31st, that's this upcoming Monday, beginning at 6 o'clock at the KUSP Studios, right here, 203 8th Avenue in Santa Cruz. That's down near the harbor. Call the station during business hours for more information. Our numbers here are 476-2800 or 1-800-655-5877.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are John Tracy, Sean Cleveland, Miles isn't here. And our guest, Craig Campbell from Nero. We're talking about burning applications, archiving, MPEG-4 stuff. And if you'd like to join the conversations, you're welcome to do so. 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can use the internet, visit geekspeak.org, click on Contact Us. Sean, you had a suggestion for going forward with Craig, and I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, Craig, we've got an expert here, and you probably know all the various formats that you can burn with Nero.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of wanted to talk to you about those, because I don't think a lot of people realize just what you can do, you know, as far as burning disks. I mean, the type of disks you can make. Of course, we all know that you can make a data disk. So the data that's on your computer that you burn to a CD or a DVD is pretty much mirrored. It's, you know, what you see on your hard drive is what you're going to see on this disk. Great for backing your data up. But what if you're going to make a mixed mode disk, like an audio data? What can you do with that these days?
Well, it's actually called CD Extra now, because mixed mode was actually where you put data first and then audio next, but you couldn't play it on your car stereo. Whereas a CD Extra, you put audio first because your stereo always looks at the first session, so you can play it on your car, and then data second because your computer always looks at the second session. So, yeah, CD Extra is so you can put audio on there, so you can go to your car, play it, listen to music, and then when you get to your destination, begin your work. You have all your data stored on there, your document files. You can do that with DVD as well, of course.
And if you have, let's say, MP3 files, and you wanted to listen to those in your car, you could very easily do that with this software, right?
You sure can.
Yeah.
You can also easily do that with that. Also, a lot of people are not aware of, let's say you're doing traveling on a plane and you got a 13-hour flight, so you want to watch a movie, but you also have to do work. With the Recode program, you can use the remake DVD option or even copy the DVD 9 to DVD 5 and put your video content on there, but also add your data. So now you're watching your movie, and if you have to, stop that and start working on your documents that you have to do at the end of the trip.
Oh, that's great. Okay, so you can make bootable discs.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to make a disc that maybe a recovery type of disc for Windows, you could easily do that. I know that's a really big thing online right now. People are coming up with different ways of making bootable discs, recovery discs, that sort of thing.
Correct.
What's a UDF disc?
UDF, that's Universal Drive Format. That basically is, with normally with data CDs, it's ISO 9660. That's just a file structure, and there's limitations in file size and naming size, whereas UDF, there's no limitation. You can go up over 190 length for the file name size, so it's more versatile in that sense. Gives you more freedom for naming your files or naming your disk.
I'm going to invite Dee Dee to join the show from us. We're going to do this through the internet. Dee Dee, are you with us? And Dee Dee's not. Sorry about that. So go on. Sorry.
No problem. So the versatility of the UDF is the file name and the structure and the file size. But the drawback is, of course, not all devices or systems can read it. You have to have a UDF driver to read it. Microsoft provides a UDF driver. Under Windows XP, but under 2000 or 98 or ME, you'd have to provide a driver from a third party, which we also provide.
Interesting. Okay.
There's also UDF format for packet writing. What that allows you to do is to format a rewritable media and treat it like a floppy.
So that you can write and erase from it.
Exactly, and modify and change the files. Whereas normally using the other format, it's permanent. You cannot modify. You can erase and start over, but you can't modify and make changes.
And that was very difficult to do in the past. Just took a lot of time and a lot of space on the disk. Has that gotten better?
It's improved, but it's still not as reliable as the normal data CD creation. If you have something that you have to have 10 years from now, don't go with packet writing. But if you're just distributing content quickly and you don't mind if it's lost because you have it backed up somewhere else, then it's really very versatile and friendly in that sense.
Okay, now let's talk about music discs. You have the ability to make a Nero digital audio disc.
Right.
What is that exactly?
Yeah, what's the difference between that and a normal audio disc?
Well, a normal audio disc is, again, you have the audio compression and the quality going on. If there's been third-party comparisons and they have compared our Nero Digital MPEG-4 or MP4, some people refer to it as AAC audio, and our quality is much better than MP3, WMA, OGG, any of the other audio formats as far as...
So it's not a standard CD disc, it's a MP3 type disc?
Actually it's more referred to now as AAC.
Now, what commercial players can play that codec of yours or that disc?
There are players out there that do play the AAC format, but nowadays you see stuff like iTunes, that's all MP4. Our content will play on the iTunes player. So those type of players are coming out now because they want to have good quality audio at low bit rates so they can fit more onto that content. Of course, with an iTunes, you have, 50 gig, 40 gig, 20 gigs. That's a lot of hard drive space. So
now how does this file size compare to MP3?
It's about half the file size and better quality than MP3.
No kidding.
Yeah.
We're going to go ahead and take a call. We have Janet from Santa Cruz. Janet, welcome to Geek Speak. Hello, Janet.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
I have an iBook from 2001, and it's had issues all along, but I think it's having a final issue where I might have to lump it, but I just wanted to make sure if I had any options first. The problem is the FireWire connector isn't working anymore. It's not recognizing my external hard drive or any of my external devices.
Simply, have you restarted?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've done a million things, and I've troubleshooted by trying those devices and my cords on other computers, and they're recognized. And the metal in there is a little cockeyed, like you can see.
Well, that sounded like a little bit of a feedback from the call that we're having with Janet. Janet, I'm going to have to say goodbye to Janet. Hopefully we'll answer the question without...
I can get some of this on the air. I think she was talking about how the metal in the port looks kind of screwed up, and there's... Inside the port, there's 6 pins. Each of those needs to be aligned and needs to be fairly clean for a good connection. If you use FireWire devices a lot, which it sounds like she does because she said she had different devices she was trying, it is very possible that the port is simply damaged. The port simply got damaged during.
It sounds like the metal's bent. It's probably got yanked really hard. So what happens? You got an iBook and that's going on. You can get that repaired, right?
Not really. I mean, that's a motherboard replacement, or I'm sorry, a logic board replacement to get something like that repaired. All the ports are soldered directly onto the motherboard, and most people don't do component-level repairs of
What about like boards. A FireWire PC card? Cause, the iBooks don't have PC cards.
Yeah, they don't have PCMCI.
Yeah, well. I guess that's a big expense.
Unfortunately, you can try reinstalling the OS. You can try doing the latest upgrades. A lot of times there are different software problems that can happen. Things can become corrupt and stop recognizing FireWire ports. It's worth resetting the parameter RAM by restarting it, holding down Command Option PR. Those kind of settings are kept in parameter RAM. But my guess is after you do all this, you will find that it is a hardware problem. And unfortunately, there really is no solution other than getting
a new machine. Well, when Janet did call back. We're not going to continue the conversation, though. Janet, thank you very much for calling in with the question. I hope that John answered that effectively.
And if not, please go ahead and email geeks@geekspeak.
That's wonderful. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Sean, we're going through different things with Craig that Nero burns. The Nero CD audio is what we were talking about prior.
The Nero Digital Audio disc.
Nero Digital Audio. And Craig, I'm assuming that when you do see that new Nero Digital logo on DVD players and such, that it will also be able to play these MP3 type 4 or the AAC type audio files of yours?
Yes, it'll play the MP4 audio and AAC audio files without any problem.
Do you see a large consumer desire for better quality than what MP3 can offer?
Not in the average market, but in your high-end geeks market, yes, I do. Definitely. And what I really see is in the future where you get players that won't have such large capacity will need this because they'll need to be able to have small file sizes with good quality.
Does iRiver support this?
Excuse me?
iRiver?
I believe it does, yeah.
But this is really burning CDs, though. So do you also allow people to convert, to rip a CD, to take a CD, put it in there, and make your audio file formats?
You bet. We have the audio extraction capability. As long as your drive can support extraction, we can do it.
It's called RIP CD tracks.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I've yet to find a drive that does it at faster than 16x, though, reliably.
And you really don't want anything faster than that to get reliable and good quality. Yeah. You start getting pops and hisses, and the quality will drop down once it starts reading. Even it might do good at the inner portion, but when it gets to the outer portion of the disk, there would only be problems.
Because so much data is being forced in.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. We.
But not only can they rip them, Lyle, you can also edit audio, too.
You can edit. We have two
it's
programs.
It's kind of a full package.
The Nero Wave Editor can edit any audio. It has a lot of special effects. So what's even neater is our Nero soundtracks. Let's say you have old LPs or cassettes that you need to capture. Well, you just connect it right to your sound card, and the soundtracks will automatically capture it. You can set it to detect silences at 1 second, 2 seconds, your preference.
To create new tracks.
Right. So it'll split them up to tracks for you automatically. So it captures it for you and just click it and burn.
And then you can normalize.
What about the popping and hissing that comes with...
It will clean both the Wave Editor and soundtracks will automatically clean that out for you.
So if you're going to be taking a whole bunch of LPs and transferring them to computer to then burn CDs, this package will allow you to do that pretty effectively.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got to try that out. I've got to try that out. Thank you very much. Stay with us, please. We do have a call from Santa Cruz. You know, it's so nice to be talking about something that's Windows-based because we so often relate to Macintosh shows. And from Santa Cruz, Steve's got a Macintosh question. Steve, what's your question?
Yeah, I have a couple of computers networked together, not through a server, and I'm using OS X. And, I set up both accounts to be administrator accounts. And yet, whenever we create a new folder on one of the drives, not all the time, but lots of times, the other person doesn't have the permission, to access it, do stuff, and I have to go in manually and set the permission on the folder. And is there some default way that folders can be made so that the administrators will have the?
Let's see if Dee Dee knows this answer. Dee Dee from New York through the internet using Skype. Dee Dee, what's your response? Were you listening clearly to Steve's question?
Could you repeat the last part?
Basically, Steve's wanting to know about Macintosh shares and making sure that people have access to SharePoints. Well, you know what? Since John was listening, I'm sure he can go ahead and address the issue.
That's a tough one because OS X is a Unix-based operating system, and when you make folders, you assign permissions at the creation of the folder.
Yeah, you can't do that.
So what you want is some default way of, when you make a folder, having it automatically be set with certain permissions, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
It seems like there should be a way to do that. It's such a useful feature.
Is that new? Is this new users always using the system, or is it the same set of users?
It's the same set of users.
Okay, well, the trick to this is making a group. So what you'll do, have you done this?
Well, yeah, I have an admin group.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, both there's basically two of us here, and we're both in the admin group, but yet we don't get to access each other's.
Okay, this is the deal. When you make the folders, so basically every time you got to fix the folder permission.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, one way to do this, if you're in a pretty closed network, you can put all your content in this folder called sharing. Public inside your home directory. Then you guys can see each other. You won't be able to edit it though, so that's kind of a problem. There is a sticky bit in Unix, and if Miles was here, he would tell you how to set a folder and then set the sticky bit so that when new files get created, it uses the permissions of the folder. If you don't do it that way,
terminal for that.
Didi, do you know how to set the sticky bit with the chmod?
It's a plus s in the on the command line.
Okay.
And you use a chmod.
So you do a chmod on the command line to the root folder that you want that you're sharing.
Okay.
And then you do a dash s. So you set the permissions using chmod plus s. And you'll see that from there on out, new folders will have the same permission as the parent.
Oh, okay. So I could actually do that even to the main directory.
Sure, and you just set, you know, the admin group to have read and write access to the folder you create, and when you do that same thing, do the plus s, and then any new file should do that stickiness.
Plus s or minus s?
Didi?
Minus would take it away, plus adds it.
Okay. John,
there's a company in Germany called Helios that makes a program. It's Helios AetherShare, AFP, and it has a smart permissions. Basically, it eliminates this problem. When you create folders, you can say, and then make folders like this. So then when you make the folders, it's kind of a default setting. It's not free. Uh-huh. I don't have the price up here, but it's something to look into. So, yeah, I figured other people would have had the same problem, and there would be workarounds up there. So
good luck with your with the dilemma.
All right. Thanks a lot, Lyle.
Thank you. Bye. And in Santa Cruz, we're going to Robert, who has a question, I'm assuming, for Craig Campbell of Nero, who's our guest today. Robert, what's your question?
Yeah, thanks. Craig said something earlier about burning CDs two different ways, and if you need to archive it, to burn it one way. If it's something that you have backups, then isn't that crucial? You can burn it a different way. Could you explain that?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? It's very dim there.
Yeah, we'll repeat that. You said earlier that there was two ways to burn DVDs, if you're archiving the data, or if you're doing something else, the data. Steve, Robert, specify what you mean, archiving or some other way?
I think it was more a matter of if it's your only copy, if it's critical, that it be burned properly,
yeah.
Right one way, and then if it's something where you have a backup and it's not, you know.
I remember part of the conversation on that. Okay. Do you remember that, Craig?
Yeah, basically that was with the packet writing, the UDF format. There's different types of UDF. There's the UDF ISO, which is used in Nerovarnir ROM. That's reliable. But when you use the UDF for packet writing, such as using our NCD form software, or the Direct CD from Roxy, or DLA from Sonic, everyone has their own packet writing software. But if you're using packet writing, which is the ability to treat a rewritable drive, a disk, like a floppy, that's when it's not reliable. If you're going to burn to CDR media where it's burned once, then it's reliable because it's not going to be erased, it's not going to be deleted, it's not going to be corrupted.
I see. Okay, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
All right, let's get back to more of the product information. And actually, I want to talk a little bit more about some of the other stuff that you're doing, specifically Nero Media Home. This has to do with this whole movement that the home computer, the computer in the home, is starting to become the media center. And some companies, I think John and Sean are both owners of TiVo systems, which kind of have they've got another way. You've got a dedicated media system in your home, which isn't your computer, it's something else. But there's kind of a merging going on. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we're just beginning in this area, and in most cases you have to have, like Microsoft, you have to have their Media Center Edition software. So you have to buy that operating system to get this going. What we've offered is in the new 6.6 upgrade, which is a free upgrade to anyone who has 6.0 already, is our Nero Media Home. And this will work under 98SE, ME, 2000, XP, no extra software or hardware needed, and it will work with any UPnP device, Universal Plug and Play.
That's something I hadn't heard about until this morning, so please tell me a little bit more about Universal.
Well, Universal Plug and Play, this is for wireless networking, basically. Right now, with wireless, you have to set the protocol, set in the password, encryption, and all that, and that's a lot of work. Your beginner doesn't want to do that. They want devices that are just plug and play. So with Universal Plug and Play, it's a standard that was set out by a group of people so that new devices will follow the standard, and there's no configuration needed. It's already done. If it's UPnP, it will talk to any other UPnP certified device.
Now, what we're talking about here is you buy a UPnP television, and your computer has maybe a UPnP card in it or something.
Mm-hmm.
And when you turn on your television, it has like one of the channels is your computer.
Right.
Is that kind of how it works?
Yep. It'll go out there and check for a server, in our case, the NeuroMedia Home server, and communicate with it. And now you can go and browse it and see all the audio files, video files, pictures.
Tell me, when you say media, the Neuro Home server, what is that? Is that a...
That's your computer. So it's a program that you launch on your computer, and now your computer has become a server in that sense. And it will share content that you have selected to share. It will only share what you've selected. So you would select pictures and audio and video that you want shared, and then any UPnP device will connect up. Your computer would, of course, have to have a wireless connection, and it will connect up to it and be able to play that content.
How does copyright and ownership work in this situation?
Well, in this kind of situation, in the near future, there will be, you know, DRM content protection and all that initiated, but right now we do not have that.
So right now, if you buy a system, you're really set up?
Yeah.
So which devices support this?
Well, Philips just came out with the TV. You have PDAs out there that are wireless, that are UPnP. You have computers that have wireless. So you will soon see stereo systems, TVs, and all these other devices coming out with it. You have, like, D-Link has an extended media service. They have that device. ADS has a device like that. So there's already a lot of extended media servers that connect up to your TVs and then will connect to your computer via wireless in that fashion.
That's great. TiVo has that service now, but only with audio files and pictures.
Right.
And it's very limited.
Right. Like I was doing the CS show, I was showing on a TV, a Sony TV with a D-Link device in our near media home. I would start playing a song and then go back, and while that song's still playing, start viewing pictures. So now I got a slideshow going on without having to create a SVCD or a DVD.
What's the wireless technology this UPnP is working on? Is this like 802.11?
Yes.
Okay. So it's kind of going to ride on top of other protocols.
Exactly.
Okay.
Isn't it based on WiMAX?
It's going to be based on that as well, too, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so it's going to be kind of a system that grows as you go.
But it only works through wireless. You can't use a wired connection?
Oh, no, you can do LAN as well.
Okay.
So you just really, the wireless is just so that a person doesn't have to have their computer and their TV.
It's so you can stream it to other places.
Yeah,
right.
It's pretty easy. This sounds pretty exciting to me for the home solution. I'm a little curious about what would happen in an apartment complex or even a hotel situation where you could be broadcasting this kind of stuff all over the place. What's the kind of bandwidth we're talking about? I mean, is it really just limited to the wireless protocol underneath?
Yep, that's all that limitation is. That, and of course your system hard drive speed and how many people are accessing it. So you gotta have if you got a lot of people accessing it, you better have a fast server, and of course you have the limitation of the wireless bandwidth.
And what about HD content?
Not a problem.
High definition, you could do that too?
Yeah, that can be done too. In fact, what we have in our Neuro Media Home, we have a transcode option. So let's say you have a device that supports only, let's say, MP3, but your audio content's all in WMA, WAV, what have you. Will detect that what you support on that device and convert it before sending it.
Oh,
same
no
thing
kidding.
With video.
That is cool.
It will also convert video. Let's say you have a PAL player, but all your content's in NTSC. Will convert it before
and
you send it.
PAL is the European format.
Television format. From Pacific Grove,
wow,
we have Paul, a Neuro question. Paul, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Yes, hi. How are you guys doing?
Quite well, thank you. What's your question?
Good. High-end oriented, like DVD audio and super audio CD, any support for that type of thing?
The DVD audio support we will be supporting in the very near future. We can already create DVD MP3 audio, but the DVD audio standard is still being groaned.
Right.
So we haven't jumped on that bandwagon yet, but we will be.
What's a super audio CD, Craig?
The super audio CD, that's really not a standard everyone's jumped on or come on board. It's, some of the Asian countries are coming out with their own standards for both audio and for DVD. Like, you got this HD DVD and Blu-ray DVD that the movie industries are pushing, and Sony and a few other people. And some of the another Asian country is coming up with their own standard that they're trying to push, but they don't have the backing of the movie industry, so it's going to be limited. Same thing with the super audio CD.
There's really three kind of pieces here you got to put together. You've got to get somebody that you got to get creation of this technology. So burning software, for example, if you want to make your own stuff, you got to get major players in the media creation industry, video or you know, movie industry or the music industry, to produce content that has this format by default. And then you have to have players and things that can actually, you know, let you listen and watch this content working. And all those pieces have to fit together at the same time.
Exactly.
So what you're saying is the SACD, the Super Audio CD, it failed in some of those respects, and therefore it's not around, and you don't support it in your burner.
Correct.
And the DVD audio, everybody knows it's going to happen, but it's not really defined either.
Correct.
Well, you need a really nice stereo system to bring out DVD audio, because it holds about as much audio content as a CD does. It's just it's higher quality.
Exactly.
What I'm wondering, why didn't they just make a CD quality DVD? You know, it's something that you could put a whole box set on one DVD. Because I'd love to get a car stereo, you know, and maybe I could listen to all the Police on one disc.
If you had a
DVD
player in your car stereo.
Because I don't need the quality in my car.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Well, thank you very much, Paul. Did we answer your question?
Real quick comment. The virtual keyboard does have some kind of audio feedback, apparently, that you can adjust the volume level so you get some sort of feedback.
You get some clicking.
Kind of clicking sound. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, the Acuras now come with a DVD audio system in the car, but it supports only that sort of multi-surround sound format. So that was all.
All right. Thank you very much for that information.
Great info.
How would someone that gets a new Acura that has that system in there, how would they create audio for that? Do you know, Craig?
For the DVD audio?
Yeah. Multi-surround sound kind of thing.
Right now, there's really no one out there software-wise that's supporting the DVD audio standard right now. So they'd probably have to wait. They'd have to buy the content, existing content, but creating, they're really out of luck for a little while longer.
Okay. Well, Craig, was there anything else you wanted to touch on before we say goodbye to you today?
I think we pretty much covered everything today that I can think of.
We do have one package of Nero 6 Ultra Edition here. The geeks have it, and we're planning on giving it away. So the question is, how we give this away effectively? I would say that the next caller to call in and tell Maggie that they want it gets it. Right now, the phone numbers are 476-2800. Toll-free at 1-800-655-5877.
Boy, that phone light lit up right away.
You will have to come and get the product from the station. Thank you, Craig Campbell from Nero, for joining us today on GeekSpeak.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. And Dee Dee, thanks for joining us through Skype. Dee Dee, I want to just test this real quick. How you doing? Are you there with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
It works pretty well. We're going to have to hone out all the details and everything.
Yeah.
You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are John Tracy, Sean Cleveland, Dee Dee from New York through the Internet, and also our guest, Craig Campbell. Gray Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Gray Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. We have given away the Nero 6, so please stop calling. Our guest today was Craig Campbell. He is the U.S. Technical Manager for Nero, formerly a head software, makers of CD, DVD burning software, and whole media packages available for the Windows platform. Sean, John, thanks for joining us today.
Always a pleasure.
That was great.
If you'd like to learn more about John's personal story on his computer repair stuff, it's up on geekspeak.org. Next week we'll be back, as we are every week here on KUSP. Our producer, Maggie Cleveland, thank you very much for doing all the work that you do every week. And for everyone that called in, your participation on GeekSpeak is wonderful. If you'd like to send us emails and questions, you can do that via geekspeak.org. Thank you very much for listening to GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. Next week, we are going to do a show on, we're going to do a whole month of, Sean, MP3 players. And we're working on getting Apple and their new stuff.
Next month?
Next month.
Which is next week.
Next
by the
week,
way.
Yeah. Starts next week, right?
Because we have Intel scheduled for February.
Intel, thank you very much. February, what's the date?
and Seagate wants to come back, and Plextra wants to come on.
Okay, so we're going to push on the shows that we had
to
cancel.
So we'll see what happens, but we have a lot of people who want to come on the show. So there's a lot of good content.
Okay, so Intel's coming on.
Don't know yet. It'll be sometime in February, though.
All right.
And
Wobber...
most likely talk about PCI Express. That's the new bus technology that's replacing PCI and AGP.
The winner of the software, the Nero 6 edition software, who will be coming to the station to pick it up at some point, is Robert. Robert, thank you for calling in. Thank you for listening to GeekSpeak. Support for this program is provided by a grant from Howley Family Fund at the Community Foundation of Santa Cruz County. Coming up next is Open Road and Two Steps of the Blues, following with Charlie Lang. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP, KBH, San Arturo, on the web at kosp.org.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The Iraqi leadership is claiming a big victory in its battle against insurgents. Today, the government announced it had captured three high-ranking officials connected to accused terror mastermind Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. Today, Deputy Prime Minister Barham Saleh talked about the effect the arrest might have.